Whenever I see them pop up on Twitter, I always read it as indie popcorn. Like, I can't indie not popcorn. Read it that way.
Yeah, it's a convention about popcorn is what it is. Welcome to episode 88 of One More Podcast, part of the Retroids.com podcast network. My name is Eric Bailey. I still giggle like a little girl sometimes, and I am the editor-in-chief of OneMoreCastle.com.
My name is Eric Hunter. I am the audio engineer, and I have got all the Game Genie codes you could ever want.
Well, I am Joe Walker, host of the Backlog web series, and I have the death sentence on 12 systems.
Nice.
Best reference nice. Joke ever.
Did you enjoy May the 4th?
Dude, we watched all three original trilogy movies.
Wow.
And we made like this huge YouTube playlist of all these funny Star Wars videos. We did it in style, man.
Fantastic. Wow. That's what I want to hear.
I will shamefully admit, with full shame, my wife had to remind me that it was May the 4th when May the 4th arrived.
Oh, what?
I know, and I'm a pretty big Star Wars nerd. I used to be hardcore, like, super Star Wars nerd. I'm disappointed in myself, I know. My geek cred.
Are you saying that we have to get your wife on now to do the podcast?
I am so proud of her. I got her hooked on a mobile game. That was a milestone this week. I tried to trick her into calling Link Zelda, and she didn't go for it. She's like, that's not Zelda, that's Link.
Ooh.
And she, like, she's tired of people getting it wrong. Like,
right.
She's not a gamer. She does not play video games, but vicariously, through my life, being exposed to people getting Nintendo things wrong, she's sick of people calling Link Zelda. So, yeah. I'm so proud of her. She's coming a long way.
Have you seen that t-shirt that has a picture of Link on it and it says, what if Zelda was a girl?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's like there is no emoticon for what that shirt makes me feel. It's
it's very upsetting.
What if Metroid was a girl?
Whoa.
Why can't Metroid crawl?
Because
she can. You just have to play Zero Mission.
Metroids can crawl.
Listen, man.
I mean, technically.
Miiverse is a scary place.
It's true. Was it SR-48? Is that the planet that she's.
Ignis put in two letters, two numbers, and she's been there.
Is it SR-388?
For those who have ever listened or watched our podcast ever before, you might notice that episode 88 is a little different because Jason, our PC specialist, is not here. In his place is Joe Walker, as he set up the Backlog miniseries. Joe, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Got big things going on for you, Joe. You don't even know.
Oh, man. It's crazy times. But no, the Backlog, it's about forgotten and obscure retro games that are cheap and easy to find. Because, hey, man, like everyone's always talking about, like, ooh, here's Panzer Dragoon Saga. Want to spend $400? I'm like, no, man. Here's this great game that's going to cost you $10. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do. Mm-hmm.
It's a worthy cause.
And you do it well. You really do.
Thank you. I try really hard.
I've said it before, and I will probably say it again, but Joe Walker's production values are among the most consistently high quality I've seen, period. If you're sick and tired of like the generic YouTube channel where some guy, all he does is show straight from point A to point B gameplay footage for 30 minutes and just swearing through the whole thing, people find it hilarious. If you're tired of that, Joe Walker is phenomenally refreshing. He's actually like insightful and entertaining and worthwhile to watch, as opposed to those other people.
Oh, you guys are making me blush.
Yeah. So I'm going to say my favorite part of your series, Joe. It's probably not my favorite because my favorite is just seeing it and enjoying new games that I've never personally experienced. But I love the ones that you don't script out, because you always make a point to make sure that the viewer knows that you did not script this out. Like, that gets me every time, because it's like always a split second before I think, you know, Joe Walker probably didn't write this. Just so you know, I'm going off script. This is all just how I feel. Yeah. And I was like, son of a bitch, that guy's in my mind. Yeah. It's in my head.
It just makes Joe Walker, you know, human and relatable. And it makes you care about him when he says things like, I just thought it or just realized that. You know, those little things you say, it's true. It adds something.
You know, Joe Walker, he's a real, like, well-developed character. You know, the writers have taken the time to make sure that he grew over the season.
Oh my God, Joe Walker is a robot.
Son of a...
But no, I mean, you know, you
mentioned,
like...
Program to love.
You mentioned the guys, like, swearing all over their videos, and I try not to do that. Like, I want to do a show that you can watch
and
with your kids.
Don't get me wrong, like, I'm not saying swearing itself is the problem, but when you're not clever enough to come up with your own original content, and you rely on that tactic for a cheap punch to the audience, I don't think there's any skill needed to do it. I don't think there's any worth in... It's one thing if, like, they're trying a speed run on an obscure ROM hack that makes Super Mario World a million times more difficult. Swear away, that makes sense in that context. But
right.
You're playing a 20-year-old game, and you're just making fun of it. And it's not even, like, a bad game. You just pick... I don't know. I've seen too many of them. And it's kind of awkward. I get recommended to them sometimes on Twitter, and I'm like, yeah, it's totally a video.
Totally. Totally, it's hard to make it in the YouTubes right now.
Yeah. Do you have any advice on how I can get more views?
Don't put out shit. I mean, seriously, that's like I'm not even kidding. Like, I spoke to my domain manager today because he was like, "Oh, we're doing all this new stuff and blah blah blah." And I was like, "You know what? I'm kind of curious. How do I get more like people into my site?" And he was like, "You know what? Make stuff that matters. Like, just don't write to write. Like, write to make a difference." And I was like, all right, you've read the same books I have. Fantastic. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And I'm the worst person to ask because I make a YouTube video about every 7 years. And 90% of them have about 20 views because it's just some super obscure, like, oh, nobody's ever uploaded the opening 3 minutes to Wizards and Warriors 3 on NES. What? It's so funny. I'm going to do it. You know, right. But what I usually tell people is, look, whether you're tweeting, creating videos, writing articles, do something unique, do it well, and either entertain or inform or both. And your exposure will naturally come. And so the funny thing is, if people ask for the advice, I tell them that, and they're like, oh, yeah. And then they just kind of keep doing the same thing. It's like,
right. Yeah, I mean, it's all about your personality.
Yeah, what I tell people, and I think it's weird now that I'm at a point where people are asking me for advice, but what I always tell people is, you know, make something for you, and be yourself, because people are going to be able to tell if you're fake, and you're not going to resonate with an audience. But if you make something that for yourself, and you make it as yourself, your audience will find you.
Yeah. Inject your own personality into it. Anyone can write a wiki-style page that has information on something, and anyone can do that kind of review, frankly, in video format or otherwise. Put yourself in it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Words from the legend.
Speaking of
legends... For the rest of these hot YouTube tips, let's go ahead and send your one-time fee of $5.99 to One More Castle.
Hey-o! That'd be sweet. Send him a little manual.
I'd be okay with
Start your own retro gaming website. How to make money on your retro gaming website. Send us $30. We'll send you a little note that says charge people $30 for tips on how to... Have you guys played any old video games lately? I was supposed to ask.
We're going to let the Mr. Joe Walker go first.
I haven't been playing a lot of old stuff aside from stuff I've been doing for my show. All my free gaming time has actually been spent on my PlayStation Vita.
Ah.
I've been playing Danganronpa, and it is, whew, that game is something else. I mean, I don't want to give away too much of the story because it's a very story-driven, kind of half visual novel, half like mystery courtroom drama type thing. But if you have a Vita, you need to check out Danganronpa because it is, that game is, you can't put it down. Like, because my wife played it before I did. And she would sit and play it for 5-6 hours at a time. And I'm like, what the hell is she doing? Like, why can't she put this game down? And she beat it, and I played it. And I would play it for 5 or 6 hours at a time, so... Yeah.
Wow.
Danganronpa.
Any game you can play 6 hours straight has to be a decent game, I would say.
Yeah, and I don't even do that anymore, so it was kind of a surprise.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and piggyback that note. I want to say new job. I've had it for 8 months. I'm not sure if it's new, but I'm finding balance finally, I think, where I'm finding time to play games again, which is wonderful. So next is finding the time to play them and write about them. That's my next goal. We'll see how that goes. But not to pull a Bailey.
Oh, come on, man. Really? But, they haven't done that in a while.
But I know. But the game, it's not even the game I'm bringing to the showdown, but it's the game I'm going to write for my next Masterpiece Microscope column. So I don't want to reveal it here, but I have been playing it, and it's a great game. Always fun, whether you sit down for 5 minutes or 20 minutes, and you're just going to have to keep tuning in to onemorecastle.com to find out. It'll be up by the end of the month. I promise that.
You know what? By the end of the year. Whatever.
No. It's a monthly column. I do it every month. Other than that, I got this. So I've just been playing a lot of that. Pokemon Y.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Is it worth it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. My sister got X recently. So then I got this in the mail today, finally. And we've already schemed to where each of us now has all 3 starting Pokemon.
Wow. Nice.
So it's going to be a fun playthrough or experience or lifestyle, whatever it turns into. It's going to be good.
Weird.
I did play some Double Dragon 2 the other night.
Without me?
It's a good game.
Well, I'm training for your arrival, Hunter. I'm training.
That's so weird because I'm training too. Like, I'm really trying. Gosh.
We got to record it then. We got to do something.
Oh my God. It's going to be so bad.
You guys need to record it.
Oh.
So bad.
Oh, yeah. Also, I have this half-baked idea. I'm going to bring my Super Nintendo, 2 controllers, and Tetris Attack to Indie PopCon, and if anyone can beat me in versus mode, I will write them a check for $100. Good idea? Bad idea? What do you guys think?
That's a great idea.
Well, I'm bringing in my Genesis so we can play Mega Bomberman.
Awesome. We need to figure out the list of what we're bringing games-wise, because I'm already bringing, I think, the television, 2 boxes of shirts.
Oh, you're bringing the television? Okay.
Am I? Well, no, you can television. If you have one. I'd actually really appreciate that.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I can bring a television.
I don't know if you want. I don't know. This is why we got figured out.
So weird.
Have you played any old games lately?
Mega Man 3. Dragon 2.
Mega Man 3.
Good one.
Where do you stand on the 3 versus 2 debate?
I played Mega Man 3 for one reason, and that's to figure out why people are so bonkers about the whole slide mechanic. And I'm going to say right now, I am so sorry to bring this up again. I really am, because I feel terrible that I have to bring this up. But I felt like, as a gamer, I had to sit down and it's like, okay, I'm going to play this game as it's intended. I'm going to finish this game. And I need to figure out why this mechanic exists. So I play through the whole game.
Jeez.
And I've realized that the slide mechanic in the game ultimately is just worthless.
Nice.
Like, it really is. Like, okay, so here's where I stand. All right, so first I want to preface this with I love Mega Man. I would die for Mega Man. I would do anything for Mega Man.
He is a huge fan.
Oh my God, I love Mega Man so much.
But,
I feel like the slide mechanic was not developed correctly. I feel like the mechanic to slide was put in to change the gameplay, which is fine, but it doesn't make the gamer themselves feel like it's a natural ability that they should use while playing the game. They are forced to use the slide mechanic, which is that doesn't roll well for me, because as a gamer, when I'm playing the game, I feel like, oh, this would be a perfect time to slide, during a boss battle, but I can't because there's giant blocks and walls in front of me, so it's pointless. Only speedrunners have been able to use this ability effectively because sliding is a lot faster than actually walking in Mega Man 3. And I compare it to the dash in Mega Man X, where I feel, as a game mechanic, it feels more natural to dash out of danger than it does to slide.
Okay.
Granted, there are spots in Mega Man X where you are required to dash to get to a certain area. But with Mega Man 3, it feels like that is the only areas in the game is where it is required to do. Now, on top of that, it makes me feel like even the Morph Ball in Metroid is worthless because you are only required to morph because the gameplay and the level design is forcing you to do so. As a gamer, you don't feel like you should naturally morph into a ball to either avoid danger or because that is the idea that you should. And to me, as I'm getting older as a gamer, I feel like though that's pointless. Like all of that is maniacal and it just doesn't make any sense.
I am glad to hear you make this distinction. That's actually really well said and insightful. Bravo on that whole rant. Because when you say things like, well, it was just there to force you to have to use it to get to the next area. I mean, gatekeeping, the idea of keeping levels inaccessible until the player attains something via their own actions as a reward, that's just inherently a gameplay foundational idea. But I'm glad you said that there's a distinction between the ones that just feel force and they feel like fluff, and the ones that do seem natural, like dashing, okay, yeah, you run faster, great. But to ask the question, why would Mega Man slide?
Right. I think that's what I dealt with. Like, I feel like as a gamer, like, I don't, when I'm fighting, let's say, Needle Man, which is one of the more difficult robot masters in the game, I don't naturally feel like I should dash because as Mega Man, I feel like I should jump and shoot because that's what Mega Man is. But when Mega Man X comes out and you find the ability to dash, I feel naturally I should dash because that is the best means of transportation. And it might come down to the fact that they actually make a point in the game. Like Dr. Wily comes out in his little capsule and says, hey, guess what? You can dash now. So it feels like an event. Like it feels like something spectacular is happening and you should take advantage of it. Whereas with the slide, especially with Mega Man 3, it just kind of happens. And a lot of the NES Mega Mans happen with that. Like when Mega Man 5, you could charge up your rush suit or whatever it was called, like where you're the big beefy dude and you can like slam through bricks.
Six. Like that's, yeah.
Was that six? Okay. I
was going to say that wasn't a five.
I don't know. I'm working my way up. So. But you know what I mean? Like, they don't make a big deal about it. And I think that has something to do with it, too.
I think that's legit, that line of thinking.
I mean, Mega Man 3 is a great game. Don't get me wrong. Like, in terms of just the way they designed it, it's amazing. Bringing back Mega Man 2 characters and, you know, just shoving that suppository up the entire game. Amazing. But I just can't wrap my head around the dash mechanic. And I know I've talked about this 1,000 times.
I think if you launch into a Mega Man 3 dash-related tirade just one or two more times, the extent of your passion will start to, like, veer into comical territory. I look forward to that territory you're going to veer into.
Like, I swear I'll have something completely different to bash on. I swear I will. Like, the next time we do this, I'll find some tiny mechanic that I just can't stand, but then, and I will just blow it out of proportion.
You're going to try, Hunter. You're going to try. You'll even verbally say, I'm going to try and bash something else tonight. But instead of saying bash, it's going to come out dash, and it's going to get you started all over again.
Oh, and it's all over from there.
Yep.
So is this like the opposite of Masterpiece Microscope?
Disaster
Piece. Oh, wow. Yeah, I guess it would be. Yeah.
You should focus intensely on one tiny aspect of a game that you're like, oh, this makes this game horrible.
It's just so mind-numbing that it's so bad.
Actually, ooh, that's interesting you spin it that way. That's keep that kind of thing in your mind when you read my next article, Masterpiece Microscope, piece, feature, column.
Okay.
I'm framing the argument from the other end of the spectrum. I'll just put it that way. Joe Walker, earlier you brought up this idea of story-driven games, like how you appreciate the narrative kind of pulling you along.
Yes.
So bad.
With the Vita game, right? If I'm remembering this correctly.
Yes.
I'm finding that that's another thing I don't like about mobile gaming.
Is this like the not having a good story?
Yeah.
Or...
I've tried a couple so-called RPGs, right? Because I like the genre in a vague sense, like all kinds of RPGs, whatever. But they're not plot-driven. They're driven by timers and micro-incentives and trade trees and skill routes and crazy, like, just fluff and circumstance. I deleted one of them after playing it for a few hours. I was like, I feel like all I'm doing is a lot of nothing lots of times. Why am I doing it? I feel nothing about these characters. I feel nothing about... like, maybe I'm just a sap, but... if anyone
There was a study that went out recently that said that it was something like 90% of people who download mobile games only play them for less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, and they delete them. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it. So, I mean, that's... I think... I mean, just in general, because I play a few mobile games, but I'm not hardcore into them like I am, you know, the Genesis or the NES or... mm-hmm. Oh my God, the Dreamcast is so amazing. But I think the problem is nobody's actually sat down and figured it out. Mm. You know, like I don't think anybody's figured out the formula that works for a mobile game.
I actually think a couple people have. I think there are some games that take advantage of the platform. They're like, rather than be the mobile version of a long vaunted genre, like rather than be an RPG but with micro incentives and action timers and things like that, we're going to do something completely new that utilizes touchscreen mechanics that you can't do with a controller that does things. I think there are a couple. This is a perfect segue to our listener email discussion question. Let's just go to it now.
I was
going to
say, I'm waiting for names for you to drop.
Well, actually, could I plug my friend's mobile game? Is that
cool?
Can I do that
real quick?
No,
please do. God, right now.
Okay. Like, you guys have probably heard of it because it's been like on the front page of the App Store a few times. Nope. But Kid Trip with two P's. It's made by my buddy on Twitter, Mike Burns. It's an auto-scrolling platformer, and like you tap like the left side of the screen to jump and the right side of the screen to like throw your little projectile. But it's got fantastic graphics, fantastic music. He's one of the most amazing pixel artists I've ever seen. But it's just, he recognized the limitations of like, you know, the iPhone and like the iOS, you know, platform, and built his game around that. So it's not like a really crappy platformer with like a virtual D-pad. Mm-hmm. He took away the parts that you didn't need to control, gave you what you needed, and built an incredibly challenging but incredibly satisfying game out of it. So
cool.
What's the name of the game?
Kid Trip with two P's.
Kid Trip.
Yes, Trip.
Kid
Trip.
Kid.
I didn't plan that, but since we were talking about mobile games, I just wanted to give him a shout out.
Oh, I see how it is. We bring Joe Walker on. It's nothing but plug-in. I see how. All right.
And it's time for our listener email discussion question. This one's from Jonathan Higgins. You can find him on Twitter at @RadicalDefect. That's with an underscore. @Radical_Defect. Good day and good tidings, gentlemen. I'd say long-time listener, first-time questioner, but I don't think that's accurate. I'm more like a recent listener who's binge-listened to every episode since at 41 so far. I'll wear that title with pride. Anyway, on to my listener discussion question, with a little bit of exposition. I want to hear you guys talk about indie games. You may have done this in the past, but I figure if you have, it's probably been a while. I know One More Podcast is a retro gaming podcast, but there are a good handful of independent developers out there looking to revive the retro gaming scene, and much of what makes the past great. Good, fairly recent examples Rex Rocket from Castle Pixel. I tweeted Bailey and Hunter about that one recently. To the Moon, Guacamelee, and more. Have you guys dabbled in the indie scene? Played or enjoyed some of the go-to ones like Cave Story, Super Meat Boy, etc.? What are some of your favorites? Do you agree with my stipulation that indie gaming is the closest thing the modern era has to retro gaming? Thanks for everything you do, Jonathan Higgins. I'm going to give the floor to Hunter to open this one.
This is really upsetting to me. I mean, I'm not even a kid.
Why is this upsetting to you, Hunter?
So, I know who this is. He's a very fine individual. But if he's not, if he's binging on One More Castle,
who knows that later he can edit
like he's
out
not
sound.
Listening to anything that I say. Because, like, that's my thing is indie gaming. So,
or I've lost Chris's feeds.
Hang out. And
hold up.
It's no big
this
deal.
This got real awkward.
Man, like when I first saw this, I was like, where did I go wrong? Like, come on. Like, seriously? Like, I pump this shit every week, man. Like, whatever. I'm no Joe Walker, that's for sure.
But who really is?
You. I think you would
yeah.
be. So.
It's lonely here at the top.
It does. So you want to talk about indie gaming? You want to talk about indie gaming? We could talk about indie gaming. Joe.
Yo.
So you've been a big fan of the Double Fine production of...
Costume Quest. Costume Quest is incredible. Oh, man.
Why is it incredible?
I'll refrain from plugging my show here. But Costume Quest is incredible because it takes, like, you know, like the feelings of, like, anticipation of Halloween from when you were a kid and, like, all that excitement from, like, all those Halloween specials, and it puts it into a video game that has just fantastic writing, and it makes you feel like you're a little kid on Halloween again. It's an RPG with a lot of heart, I would say.
And not even on Halloween, just being a kid. Because yeah. I think we've all gone through that where we've run into an open field and we've acted like we were Wolverine from the X-Men or Batman or Superman or anything like that. Like, that is what Costume Quest is. Like, it's taking that...
Makes me want to play.
It's taking that imagination and just blowing it up into reality. And that's amazing. Like, I don't... Like, I'm confused. Like, I don't understand what I'm supposed to talk about. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with my hands right now. I really don't. Like, do we really want to talk about indie games? Because I could go on forever.
Yeah, after reading that, I was like, there's so many I like. Like, which ones am I going to talk about? Yeah.
Oh, I've got... You kidding me, man? I got lists. You don't even know.
Yeah. All I would say is I disagree with one point in the email where he says, I want to narrow down this phrase. There's a good handful of independent developers out there looking to revive the retro gaming scene. I disagree. They're not reviving a scene. They're taking aspects of it and putting it in their games to appeal to that audience. Maybe that's a subtle distinction. Maybe... But when you say things like, oh, indie games are the modern retro games, you're just like throwing three different terms together in a mashed potato breakfast cereal spaghetti, and it's you can't...
That sounds amazing.
It is sometimes.
Here's what I think's going on. I think the majority of indie gamers grew up in the early to mid 80s. To late 80s, early 90s, and they were able to experience the 8-bit era, the 16-bit era, the 32-bit era. And I feel like when it comes to indie games, when you see these quote-unquote retro enthusiasts, that I don't think it has anything to do with talent or to do with what they feel they want to push out there. Like, I think when it comes to the pixel art and indie games, I think it comes to the idea that they don't know how to do anything else.
Yeah.
Like, the last time they saw a good-looking game, it came on the 8-bit system or the 16-bit system. Like, I don't feel like as a developer or as even as an artist that they feel like their art is clean and beautiful, unless if it's 8-bit and that comes from their past.
Yeah, and that's doubly effective because, number one, it's their influence. It's obviously going to affect their development, what they've been exposed to. So they True. Know pixel art because they've been exposed to so much of it and so much good pixel art.
Right.
And number two, it appeals to them and it has a sentimental factor. And they know that there's millions and millions of other potential audience members of their experience that share in that nostalgia. So I think they're not... Indie gamers aren't making retro games. They're making retro-style games that appeal to retro gamers. However, if we get caught up in the terminology and splitting hairs, that's not the important thing. The important thing is we're all enjoying another slice of that pie of that kind True. Of gaming we love.
I agree. I mean, it's the indie game market is it's something beautiful, and I actually wrote about this because to me, the indie game market is what the video game market as a whole was, where you found all these companies coming together in this new medium and was like, I can make a game. I mean, Mattel released a console. Mattel, the company who makes Barbie, was like, you know what? We're going to put some money into R&D and we're going to make a video game console. Do you have any idea how ridiculous that is? Yeah. That's like if like tomorrow, Bare Minimals, the makeup company was like, we have the Xbox One Plus 2, and it's releasing tomorrow.
Even like, more difficult to imagine. Imagine something coming out in some kind of entertainment device or toy that is so radically different from everything else that it captures the cultural zeitgeist, the collective imagination of our culture, appeals to millions right away, and makes furniture companies want to go into it.
Yeah.
It makes restaurant chains want to get into it. Like, can you imagine a new technology coming out and then, like, Walmart's like, we need to make hardware for that because that's the next big thing.
Well, that's when I realized the beauty of indie gaming is when Adult Swim, a channel on the Cartoon Network, which is a cable channel that just shows... Well, I wouldn't say just, but the majority of the time they just show, like, adult cartoons. They thought that would be a good idea to get into the indie game community. And by doing so, they were able to publish games like Fist Puncher, which is an amazing beat-em-up game, and Volgar the Viking, which is one of those... it's like a Ghosts and Goblins, like, hardcore... side-scrolling action platformer, like, and it's amazing. It's a great game, and they make cartoons. Like, that's how beautiful the indie game community is right now.
Yeah, it is. Indie gaming and retro gaming are natural allies. I will go so far as to say that. There's a lot of things that make sense.
I would agree with that. Because I think the reason that distinction is made so commonly is because the people who are making indie games, they are in their own separate world from, like, AAA development, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like a Wild West mentality where anything goes, and that's kind of how it was back in the retro days. Like, on the NES, like, you could make a game about any stupid thing you wanted, and you could put it out on the shelf.
Look at the list of games that got Nintendo's seal of approval on the NES. Look at the list.
Oh my gosh, it's so bad.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, tiny teams making games with enormous critical flaws in them. Nintendo's right. like, yeah, we don't know what a good video game is. Prunk, put it out. And not only was it like a Wild West back then, but sometimes retro gamers feel like they're still in the Wild West now. If you go up to what a mainstream gamer thinks they are, and you whip out your Super Nintendo at some hardcore multiplayer online first-person shooter party, those don't exist, but this is a theoretical, you can feel like the Wild West gunslinger. Like, yeah, I brought a six shooter to the M16 party. Let's do this.
A 16 shooter?
At least. Like, I think the mindset is different when it comes to indie games. Like, I think people are more susceptible to not look at the art as much. Like, there's a ton of beautiful games in the indie scene. Like, there's Braid and Limbo and Pid. Like, these games are so beautiful. in terms of design and graphics, but I think in the indie scene, at least from what I've read, like it, when it really comes down to it, it's down to the core mechanics of the game. Like, what does this game remind us of? Like, how do we feel when we're playing this game? Like, yeah, it's beautiful, you know, like, because we've gotten to the age in technology where when it comes to visual games, like, it's kind of a no-brainer. Like, if your game's not running, you know, 1080p at 30 frames per second, why would you release the game? Talking to you, Xbox One and PlayStation 4. Why would you release the game? Like, it doesn't make any sense. The technology is there. You know, yeah. So...
I want to give a quick shout-out to our live stream viewers right now commenting. They have their own great discussion going tonight. I love it. I want to acknowledge a couple of things they're saying. First of all, they're saying that we are unusually talkative and serious tonight.
Darn.
Like we're trying to build credibility.
Sorry, guys. Are we not?
Are we?
We need credibility. Dustin Faber. We got Joe Walker here.
I know. It just turned a whole nother level. Isn't that strange? When you take Jason out of the equation, we get more mature. I would never have guessed that is what we needed.
We could talk about Mega Man.
Dustin Faber says, I think sprite art is still what the general public thinks of when they think of video games. So that's the art style that will still grab the casual person. Interesting point. S. Manaberg says, another point about indie games, why does their 8-bit pixel art so often resemble 16, 32, 64-bit game console titles? Yes, I want to hop on that a second. It seems like any time it's made out of pixels, they call it 8-bit. And that's it's just wrong. Not to be the nerd who's like, that's incorrect. But it is. I mean, most NES sprites couldn't have more than 3 colors in them. And you see these, like, incredible scaling, just ridiculous gradient shading imagery. Yeah, it's like technically in pixel, sure, but that's a 32-bit graphic. Whatever. I don't know. Good question. I don't know. Good answer.
Yes.
Thoughts and feelings about games. I have them. We have them.
Man, they make me so happy when I talk about them.
Yeah.
Because they're so good and they're so fun to play and they're pretty and they sound good.
Yeah, feel good. They make me feel good.
Yeah.
It's like food for my spirit.
Whoa, dude.
I don't know about that.
Sorry. So weird.
Anyway, I'm gonna call it. Music break. That was Altered Beats by Big Al. a fun little name your own price download track for the Sega fans out there. You can check it out at the podcast episode page on warmercastle.com. Altered Beats by Big Al. That was a fun one. Speaking of fun ones, it's time for the Retro Showdown.
Retro Showdown!
For anyone who doesn't know, this is the part of the show where each of us co-hosts has chosen, secretly, an old video game. We'll have 1 minute to introduce our choice to each other for the first time. I have no idea what the other two have picked. And then we just kind of spend the rest of the episode arguing about who picked the best game. But the best part is that you, the listener or viewer, you get to vote for your favorite of the three on a poll on the episode page on onemorecastle.com. So hopefully, at the very least, one of our arguments will sway you, and at the very most, we will change your lives for the better and motivate you to stop wasting your time sitting around reading top 10 list after top 10 list on the internet until it's 3 a.m. and you're sobbing quietly to yourself because you realize that you could have written a novel in the time you've taken.
Oh, and top 10 lists are so bad.
I actually really like them. That's the funny thing. But 2 weeks ago, our theme was games that make you upset when other people talk about them because other people always get it wrong. And the winner was this guy! The really? Bailey, the Punisher. Yeah, Super Mario Brothers 2, in the closest vote we've ever had, beat Counter-Strike and Street Fighter 2 with a vote count of 13 to 12 to 11.
Wow.
When you say Super Mario Brothers 2, you mean Doki Doki Panic, right?
Wait, did you vote? Did you vote, Joe? Please tell me you voted. All right, thank you.
All right. I vote in every single one.
You know what, guys? I'm going to go slit my throat. I will be not back ever.
Right back. Oh, and Bailey is gone.
All right, let's talk about Sega stuff.
Okay, so, oh, my God. Sega's so amazing.
So, nice try, guys. Not on my watch. Tonight, we have a theme, too. Tonight's theme is themeless. We have a special guest, so there's no need for a theme. We're just going to do a free-for-all, so... Whatever, any old video game you want. That's the theme tonight. Old video games. How's that for a theme, guys? Is that better? Is that more to your liking?
It's like the Wild West in podcasts.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, it's synergy.
Jason is usually our timekeeper. He is absent and Canadian, bearded. So Hunter. Although you are not absent or Canadian or very much
totally
bearded.
Bearded, though. Yes.
Okay. Do you mind keeping time tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Great. That's great. Things. So I'm ready to go whenever you're ready to time me.
And go.
I decided tonight to pay homage to Jason for being kind enough to pass me the torch of Retro Showdown dominance lately. So I thought, what game would Jason Lamb bring to the Retro Showdown? And it hit me like a ton of bricks, or more accurately, like a colony of ants. It's Sim Ant by Maxis, the 1991 PC release, although it also got a Super Nintendo release in 1993. This is a population simulation game, much like SimCity, but with a twist. You're in charge of an ant colony. You must guide your delicate insect population through the rigors of a full game, complete with seasonal adjustments, or through a particular challenging scenario, with options to alter ant behavior, some pleasant background music, and loads of replay value. Sim Ant is a clear winner.
Wow. Bailey bringing a PC game.
Booyah. Yeah.
A shitty PC game.
Well, hey, save it for the showdown.
What? I didn't say anything. All right, I'm going next.
Uh-oh.
Are you guys ready?
Can we trust you to time yourself?
Oh my gosh, yes. I'm not Jason Lamb. Like
Touche. So,
I guess. Thank you. My pick for this week has Bruce Willis in it. Yeah. That Bruce Willis, like from the Die Hard movies and stuff. Like totally amazing, right? Like, I don't even know. Like run and gun and sci-fi. I don't even know. Like amazing. Apocalypse for the PlayStation. It's really good. And there's like a bad guy and stuff. Oh my God. Super amazing. Apocalypse. Yippee-ki-yay. Melon Farmer.
Oh man, I don't even want to go now.
I don't really want you to go either, to be honest. So I'm glad we got that out of the way. I'm glad someone else said it first. So Hunter.
No, wait, I want Joe Walker to go. It's Joe Walker.
You are the audio engineer. You are the only one who technically can hold the release of the episode hostage.
But let's admit, I'm a lot nicer to you guys than I am to me. Come on.
I have a special bulletin.
All right.
Apparently in the chat they are saying that Sim Ant has already been brought to the showdown.
Has it? Oh, is this the first time one of us forgot?
All right, so I need to clarify. So the rule was...
Oh, wait! Was it brought on an episode I wasn't here? Is that why?
No, so the yep.
No,
so
I'm
the game,
hearing that Tom Hall brought it.
So the was game it, was brought.
Okay, one of our fact checkers out there, just let me know. Was it the time I was gone?
It doesn't matter.
I will switch
so
this
here,
to Simcopter.
Here was the
I'll
rule.
Go there.
Here's the rule. The rule was you can bring a game that somebody else has brought, but not
absolutely.
Yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
It but me. When Jason brought the game, it was for the SNES. It was not for the PC, surprisingly
Thank
enough.
Thank you. The PC is the superior Master Race. The superior version.
Wait, so Bailey brought the PC version and Jason brought the Super Nintendo
it's
version?
It's Bizarro yeah, that's, World that tonight, was, son. I can't deal with
that. That was like 15 minutes of the conversation was, why did you bring a console game? Because you are, in fact, Jason Lamb.
Wow. I don't know which way is up anymore.
But dude, whatever. You brought Gunstar Heroes last time you came here, so whatever, dude.
No,
like, I'm not
playing Gunstar
this
Heroes
game.
The first time I came here. I brought Panic last time I was here.
This
oh,
is a lot
right.
of trash
still
talk
lost.
Between the
still
mere
lost.
Introductions. This is one. All right. Sparks are flying.
Hunter, give me my minute.
Preliminarily.
All right, you are laying it down right now. Go.
All right, so I've won the last two times I was on the podcast. Oh, and so tonight's kind of a heat check. I got no script. I'm going straight from the heart, straight from the dome. This is for a console that a lot of people think is a joke, but it is a console that I have a lot of affection for.
Apple Bandai Pippin.
I'm bringing Knuckles Chaotix for the Sega 32X.
Oh!
That's right. The cool one out of Sonic's friends gets his own game, and he's got even more cool friends in this one. You've got like Mighty the Armadillo, Espio the Chameleon, Charmy B, Vector the Crocodile, and you've got this great rubber band mechanic where you're playing two characters at the same time, launching each other all over the place. This game, since it was on the 32X, it's bursting with color. It's got great music. It stands right up there with Sonic 2, Sonic 3, and Sonic CD, if you ask me, and I'm always right about everything. That's Knuckles Chaotix for the 32X, baby. Mic drop.
So, Bruce Willis.
That was an interesting intro you gave. I mean, some weeks you're literally poetic, Hunter. This week, were you going for like a Valley Girl vibe? What was that?
Wait, do you mean like literally as it is stated literally? Or
no, I mean literally like once you wrote a poem and that was your intro. Like,
I did, yes.
That was strong. So. Tonight, weak sauce, my friend. Bush League.
Oh, really? Bruce Willis, dude. I don't know any way
what?
To say that.
What? I can't
Bruce
hear
Willis.
You over the sound of these chips I'm eating.
So Bruce Willis was in the game that I
brought,
Apocalypse.
Yeah, when
Apocalypse.
You eat chips, it like crunches like in your own head. It's so loud you can't hear anything.
Amazing run and gun sci-fi environment. The engine was retooled to make the very first Tony Hawk Pro Skater. And actually, Bruce Willis was the first Pro Skater and Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
Awesome. Thank you, live stream viewers and commenters, for confirming that, yes, Simant was brought before, but it was because that was the week I missed. I legitimately missed. I'm sorry. I missed it. That's awesome. I feel really good that I picked a game Jason would bring.
Because he already brought it, yeah.
Well, no, it wasn't him. That was Tom. I noticed in your intro you said something kind of profound about your game. I wanted to ask you about it because I don't think I understood really what you were going for.
Bruce Willis is in the game.
Well, you said, I want to, this is a direct quote. There's like a bad guy and stuff.
Yes.
Okay. Can you elaborate
totally.
Here? I need
I can. I will collaborate. There is a brilliant but evil scientist known the Reverend has created a powerful idea based on the the rapidly approaching apocalypse, he uses his expertise to create four powerful horsemen of the apocalypse, war, plague, beast, and death, in order to ensure that this comes to pass. His former colleague, Trey... What, should I stop? Should I keep going?
I already have two questions. Like, already.
All right. Well, his former colleague, Trey, was voiced by Bruce Willis, is the only man with the know-how to stop the Reverend, but is locked up in jail and must escape in order to save.
So is he a Reverend or a scientist?
I'm going to say that he is a scientist with the nickname Reverend.
Perfect answer. Question two, can you really create an idea or do you merely discover it?
No, I think you can create the idea since nobody has the absolute written down what everybody has thought and or said. So anytime you think of something, it is always creating.
Well, not to burst the Reverend's little bubble, but the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, not his original idea.
No, but the idea that he's including Beast into the four and not another, I believe, is new. So,
well, in the X-Men, there's the Apocalypse, and he has his four horsemen, and there's also another character named Beast. So
basically, but they're not on the Bruce same side Willis here, right? Is Professor Xavier. He's bald.
He has telepathy.
He's clearly controlling Hunter's mind right now.
Clearly. Clearly. Yippee-ki-yay, Melon Farmer.
Melon Farmer.
I like that.
That was the, that's the diehard go-to when it's on regular TV. It was Melon Farmer, not the other, which was hilarious, if you ask me. But
sometimes the dubs for the swears are great. Forrest Gump on network television. Hilarious.
Oh, yeah. It's it!
Have we had this conversation before, by the way?
I think we have, yeah. It's still funny.
I'm so paranoid now about this. Man,
it happens.
Wait. Sim Ant on PC this time. Even better.
Why? What better is it than the SNES version?
Oh,
I mean, let's be honest.
Okay, let's go there. Mouse controls. Far superior for this kind of game.
Because that's what I need. Mouse controls.
For this kind of game you do. Yeah, you kind of do. So
Super Nintendo had a mouse.
It did.
It did.
But who wants to buy a separate mouse when with computers it just kind of comes standard, you know?
The mouse also comes standard when you buy Mario Paint for the SNES,
which is a great game.
Nobody.
You also get a hard plastic mouse pad, which was worthless.
Yeah, the Sega mouse pad was several hundred times better than the Super Nintendo mouse pad. I remember that.
At least.
Because I was the kid who got the mouse games for the consoles.
So, okay, I'm already going to put this out there. So Sim Ant was created that actually ended up spawning The Sims, which is a multi-billion dollar property. And I get that. Fantastic.
Do you? Hunter?
I do. So happy for Will Wright. I mean, just mind-boggling. So happy for him. But the fact remains that being an ant is so strange.
Boring?
Yeah, that's why in Sim Ant, you're not an ant. You're, like, in charge of all of the ants.
That doesn't make it any better. Like, I'd rather being in charge of a bunch of things that I don't care about.
Which would you rather do? Be, like, a really minuscule, stupid human being? Or be the guy who controls all the little dumb humans? I'd like to be the latter.
I'd rather be Bruce Willis in Apocalypse.
I would rather it be an echidna and a crocodile and a chameleon
to your game,
and an armadillo.
We don't...
And a bee and a robot.
Well, in Sonic Universe, they're one and the same, aren't they?
Well, this is an actual robot who is a robot, not an animal turned into a robot.
So, Joe, let me ask you a question.
It's not Dr. Robotnik.
And I want you to be honest.
Brain, Mother Melon.
Just... ignore Bailey at this moment.
Welcome to
die.
Do
you really think, as a gamer, do you think the rubber band
do
game
you think
mechanic
as a gamer? Do you think as a gamer?
Was really that, like, pronounced in the game? Like, do you think that really changed the way that you play Sonic, because there's a very specific way that you play Sonic. I have had this conversation with people on Twitter. I have never been able to get 100 rings to get an extra life in Sonic, any of the Sonics, because the idea of Sonic is to run as fast as you can and to finish the level as fast as you can. Do you feel like kind of stops you from doing that? Like it holds you back?
I wouldn't say that, because you can use it to get really big speed bursts. So, like, if you hold the A button, you can plant one of your guys so they don't move, and, like, they'll hold it. So if you start running the other direction, they'll hold you, and you get all that tension. Then you let go of the button, and you just shoot off with all that momentum. So there are areas in the levels that are built around speed, but each character also has other abilities, like climbing walls and doing stuff like that. So there's a reason it's not called Sonic. It's because running fast is only part of it. There's also a lot of exploration of these beautiful, colorful worlds.
Yeah, that's an achievement right there, having colors in your game. Yeah, why don't you mention that again? Hunter, which... I'm asking you as a Sega fan. I'm going to go here. And a Mega Man fan. Which is worse, the slide mechanic or the rubber band mechanic?
Now, the slide mechanic is obviously the worst, because Knuckles Chaotic is easily one of my favorite Sonic games ever created. So
there we go. I win the showdown.
No, you don't. Sim and
it's really good. Knuckles Chaotic is really good. I think, sadly, the fact that it was released on the 32X, it did not get what was coming to it. Like, I don't think it was... It didn't get the viewers that it was due. I mean, that's kind of disheartening. I mean, you know. I mean, look at the Virtual Boy.
It's really good. I think it was supposed to sell the system, but it didn't really get a chance to. But when I say that it stands up with like the good Sonic games, it deserves to be mentioned, like in the same breath. I think I like your mustache.
It's a foot long.
People in the live stream are wondering what you're measuring, Hunter. I think you just come clean with us.
What I am measuring is Jason's fail. Since he's not here, it makes it even funnier.
So what's the verdict? So. Is it pretty big? Pretty big.
It's actually unmeasurable, surprisingly. I mean, this thing goes... I can just keep doing stuff. You see what I'm doing here? Like, I'm doing stuff. Not even kidding. Like, this is really going on right now.
See, isn't this amazing, Joe Walker? You picked, like, a flagship banner-waving Sega game. And you have bored our resident Sega fan to the extent that he's playing with measuring tape.
142 inches of fail, Jason Lamb. I don't know what that is in meters, but I'm going to guess it's not as much. No, I think my biggest fault with Knuckles Chaotic is the fact that it was released on the 32X.
Yeah, and like, the 32X, let me talk about it. Is it true? Because I'm not a Sega historian.
It's the Virtual Boy of the
team
of the Sega Genesis
that built the 32X kept it a secret from Sega, kind of like they had like compartmentalized their hardware development. So it's like, what? We're making a 32-bit? Why? Like the Saturn team was like, well,
I think there's some truth to that. I don't know the full story, but I do think that it was kind of a Sega of America thing that they did on their own, which is part of when Sega started to fall apart.
Yeah, like I think it was one of those things that I think Nintendo of America should probably do right now and branch off from Nintendo of Japan. But that's a different story. They were looking for something to help the Genesis along because Sega of Japan was so worried about moving to the next generation, which ended up being the Saturn, because it was, you know, it was quick-witted and it wasn't as thought out as the Genesis was, that they were like, oh, we can help. We can develop something that would work just as good, but not really. Maybe. Possibly.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, Virtual Fighter's really good, but that's about it.
Tempo's really good.
Man, Tempo
Calibri
is really good.
Is really good.
You know what, dude?
The 32X version of Blackthorn is actually my favorite.
I need to get that, actually.
What's the golf game called? Like, so-and-so
is... Oh, what is it? Golf Magazine presents 36 Great Holes starring Fred Couples.
That is probably one of the best golf games I've ever played.
Dude, I will just get out that game and sit and play a full 18 holes and just kind of zone out for a while. It's a pretty sweet golf game.
It's a nice golf game. If we could only hope that Knuckles Chaotic was as good as that golf game, you would probably win this showdown.
Okay, we have reached a truly depressing state of affairs when we're saying things like, if only that game were as good as this obscure golf game over here. Ugh.
I would say that Knuckles Chaotix is the Golf Magazine Presents 36 Great Holes starring Fred Couples of platform games.
Okay, that would be a great quote if it weren't so horribly awkward to try and say.
It doesn't have Bruce Willis in it, just so you know.
Bruce Willis has 18 holes.
Okay, so let me tell you about the beauty that is Apocalypse. So at first, this game was developed by a small developer that had a grand idea and then was picked up by Neversoft. Neversoft decided that the initial idea wasn't good enough.
Bruce Willis
and that they
is
had
Neversoft.
Wow. I'm sure we could probably get a quote from him. Anyway, so the game was picked up by Neversoft. The company was bought out. The game was ported. They decided to get a well-known figure into the game, that being Mr. Bruce Willis. Now, this dual-stick, amazing run-and-gun sci-fi game is what I just said it was. It's amazing. But not only that, it has a legacy. The engine that was created with Apocalypse was done with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
Bruce Willis was done with Tony. Never mind.
This is no.
Joe's killing me.
I don't.
If he can't stop, I can't stop.
It was just so fast. It was so perfect.
So fast. Oh, also a pun.
So let me ask you a question, Hunter. Has Neversoft ever made a game where they haven't had to rely on having a celebrity in it?
Oh, that's such Absolutely. A good question. No, they Absolutely. Have. No, name one.
And don't say Guitar Hero, because they didn't create Guitar Hero.
Oh, the
that
whole
was,
point of Guitar Hero is the celebrities that come later. Even playing the original, exactly. You're like, boy, I can't wait till they Guitar release a special edition where I can play as Aerosmith or the Beatman.
Right.
You see, when Harmonix had Guitar Hero, it was just the game with its fictional characters, and then Neversoft got it, and they were like, hey, we gotta put Slash in here.
So I'm going to name one of the probably less popular, but one of my more favorite games on the PlayStation that Neversoft was kind enough to create, which is MDK.
Was that Neversoft, or was that Shiny?
The PS port was created by Neversoft, so...
Oh, so they didn't really do any other way.
It's official. We are huge.
Of course not. No. So, but no, like MDK is such an amazing third person platform adventure game. Like, there's so many great things in that game. Please,
yeah,
check
the people at Shiny were really talented.
Yeah, and you know, Neversoft was talented enough to port the game. Maybe that'll. No,
that's I brought Sim Ant.
Dude, Sim Ant sucks. It's
Does
so
it?
Stupid.
It's fun. It's
I
good.
Squash ants for a living. Why would I want to play as one?
Okay, first of all, you don't play as one. Second of all, if you enjoyed squashing them, now you can squash entire colonies.
No, sorry.
Systematically destroy. Nope. I mean, it's
sorry.
Genocide on a mass
do
scale.
Any of,
is there any other scale for genocide?
I think ants... that's as high as it goes.
Do they have, like, lasers or, like, robot ants or anything cool like that? Because then I might get on board.
No.
There's a queen.
Just crappy ants in
There's
a realistic
ants that
environment.
Dig. There are ants that dig.
Crap.
Okay? They're digger ants. They're digger ants.
So I just wanted to make a point that Neversoft was recently acquired by Infinity Ward.
Yep. No more Neversoft.
And I wanted to list off the games that Infinity Ward has created, if you guys would humor me.
Wow.
If that's okay with you guys. Is that okay?
If you can do it in under 48 seconds.
Call of Duty. Call of Duty 2. Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Call of Duty Classic. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Call of Duty Ghosts.
You know what I would rather play than any of those games?
Knuckles
Golf
Chaotix.
Magazine presents 36 Great Holes starring Fred Couples.
Why did
but
you
also
bring
Knuckles
that game?
Chaotix.
I'd rather Why you brought that game. His ring.
Keys's Ring is a fantastic game.
Did you make a video about that? On some series you have? It was a pretty good video.
I might have. I don't know. I'd have to go check.
I know that you created a video for a Cat Trap.
I did.
Which completely
I don't
blew
keep,
my
I don't
mind.
I keep plugging myself, but yeah.
Joe, I've been plugging you for years, man. Like, you can do it yourself a couple of times to kind of take the weight off of me, please.
But I just realized that I brought a Sega Genesis game the first time I was on, a Sega CD game the second time I was on, and now I just brought a 36
Lord.
Game.
Then the madness wow. has to stop. Please, viewers and listeners.
Don't let it happen.
No, I mean, remember the Tom Hall rule. You don't have to be nice to the special guest when they've already been on before.
There you go.
Tom Hall came back and lost. I mean, normally special guests, they win. No. That's the first time they get the free pass. After that, it's upside down Mega Man time.
Like I said, it was a heat check. It's like a great basketball player like Paul Pierce, when he's making every shot, he's feeling good. He's like,
have you
I gotta,
seen
I gotta take a, I gotta take a ridiculous
man
shot.
Play lately? The other night, he comes out and he says, I'm going to guard LeBron James. LeBron James is like, okay. He scores 48 points.
We're talking Paul Pierce in his prime here.
He's old. But, oh, you Boston homer. You
what,
Boston
he plays in Brooklyn.
Homer.
He plays in Brooklyn. He doesn't play in Boston.
Yeah, but you're referring to his prime when he played for the Celtics. Don't give me this. He plays in Brooklyn crap. I'm not going to fall for your irrelevant all right. versionary all right. tactics.
When a I mean, basketball player like LaMarcus Aldridge is making every shot and he's feeling good.
Basically,
he's got to take a ridiculous shot, like his heat check, to make sure, like, okay, can I make this shot too? This is my heat check.
Joe Walker, I love you so much. I want to do an NBA podcast with you and call it Tecmo NBA Podcast.
Wow.
I like it.
Okay, cool.
To segue back into the showdown, speaking of
more to say.
Tom Hall, I just wanted to bring up one of the funnier things that he said on the show, which was I asked Tom Hall one time during the showdown why he was being so mean, and he said because it was the showdown.
It's true. That's when it's time to get mean.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Is this because of my love fest I just had with Joe Walker? Was that inappropriate?
No. I mean, it's
I take it back, fun. Joe Walker. I will hunt you down. Kill you in your sleep.
That's why
better?
We have a record number of people watching, apparently. Like,
record.
They're here for the love.
Record number.
Can you feel... Final arguments, love guys. I'm
tonight.
I'm throwing in the towel, the white flag. I'm throwing in the red flag, the black flag, and the turquoise mauve taupe flag as well.
Salmon.
Isn't final argument.
Black arguments. Flag an ant spray?
I get that reference. Hunter, why should anyone vote for Apocalypse?
You should vote for Apocalypse because it has Bruce Willis in it. And it's a run and gun game, which is my favorite genre of games. And it's sci-fi, which is my secondary go-to when it comes to stuff.
Hunter, all I will say is your pick this week is so dumb. In the notes I took about your intro, I just decided not to ask you about any of this. It's not even worth talking about. And I've never said that before on any episode, but...
Bruce Willis. Yippee-ki-yay, Melon
Farmer. It's more like Bruce Wontis.
That Bruce is pro terrible. That's terrible.
I'm proud of that one. Joe, why should anyone vote for Sonic Chaotix?
Well, you should vote for Knuckles Chaotix because it's a great game, and we need
is
to
it?
Wrong... the sins of our past, where we did not appreciate the 32X in its time. Now is the time to make sure that it gets the attention and love that it should have had back in the day. But no, it's a great game. It stands right with the best Sonic games. And if you don't want to vote for that, you should vote for Golf Magazine Presents 36 Great Holes, starring Fred Couples.
Or you should vote for like something good that came on a 32X, like Virtual Fighter.
You should vote for Sim Ant because it's fun and it's quirky. I mean, it took a unique sort of visionary to have this kind of creative idea. It's presented in a mode unlike the other prototypical SimCity games. I really like the seasonal aspect to it and the way the game builds and moves and shifts. I like that it is so random. Like, could we simulate an ant colony? And they're like, yeah, let's go for it. earlier in the show, we talked about the Wild West era of games when developers weren't afraid to innovate and go into territories and areas that nobody else had gone before. Sim Ant represents one of the vestiges of that period that we can still cling to. And
30 seconds.
Joe Walker just masterfully undercut my point. That was.
See, normally I cut those out, nice. But that was so classic. Like, that I had to keep it in.
That was good. Joe Walker,
thank you.
Suck. And that's the showdown. This has been an episode.
Yes, it has.
It's been a fun episode, I think.
It's very fun. I hope for the viewers and listeners I had to endure multiple technical difficulties going on longer than we ever have before, etc. Thank you so much to live stream viewers watching and commenting. I just want to give a shout out to some of them. Thank you so much. Whether you commented or not, Walter Williams, Dustin Faber, Hueva Das, Valerie Minnick, Emily Louder, Joshua Tiberius, S. Manneberg, Brent Jareski, Captain Knucklehead. A few of you joined late. That's a cruel tendency to see. Tom Hall, I see that you decided to show up last minute. Rizzard, I mean, thank you so much, guys. We appreciate it. Remember, you can always email us, podcast@onemorecastle.com. That's where we get our listener email discussion questions. Please support the Interlude artist. We love showing off chip tunes and just kind of pay him a buck. The music's worth it, typically. If it's not, let us know. We are going to be at Indie PopCon. It's a convention in Indianapolis, Indiana, May 30th through June 1st. That's just a couple weeks away. And, oh my gosh, I forgot to show the shirts that I got today. So I will be posting those on Twitter. If you want to see those, you can follow me at Nintendo_Legend on Twitter. I also have a blog, NintendoLegend.com, where I'm slowly but surely writing a high-quality review of every North American release NES game.
He swears.
Hunter, any plugs, shout-outs, hygiene recommendations?
So you can follow me on Twitter as well, @EricHunter, my indie game review blog. Indie game review blog is IamEricM.com. And my plug will have to go to the one and only Mr. Jason Lamb. You can follow him on Twitter as well, @JasonLamb. He is currently in the Netherlands drinking up beers. That makes me jealous. You can see all of those beers and more only on his Twitter feed @JasonLamb. Mr. Joe Walker.
Well, I am Joe Walker, as you probably know. My Twitter shout-out is going to go to Mr. Eric Hunter, who's a stand-up guy. Always there for you when you need him.
That's not true at all. Like, I let people die on the curb all the time. What are you talking about? What are you talking about, Joe? Sorry.
Eric Hunter, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey.
Just a reminder, the live stream broadcasts at 7:30 p.m. Central on Thursday evenings. What we do is we tweet the link from the One More Castle Twitter account. So if you have an hour, or in tonight's case, an hour and a half, plus some to spare, we'd love to see you here. It's a lot of fun. 8 is my favorite number. I was hoping episode 88 would be special, and it has proven to be. Thank you so much, Joe Walker, for filling in and always doing a great job. You're a classy individual. And to our listeners,
thanks
for having me. Yeah, our pleasure, man. Our pleasure. It's always fun to have you.
It is always fun.
To our listeners, I would just say, last but not least, remember, you are a bad enough dude to rescue the president. See you next week.